Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours Blog Talk Radio. I am GL Ross, your host for the next 30 minutes. Please feel free to call me Gail if you choose to call in and ask a question. Today's guest is author Sharon Bookbinder. Hi, Sharon, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're so excited about your new book, Kiss of the Virgin Queen, which is book two in your Kiss of the Genie Hunter series. We'd love for you to kind of tell us about this book and also give us a little bit of a synopsis to the first book, The Kiss of the Silver Wolf.
Okay, well, Kiss of the Silver Wolf was book one in the series, and Kiss of the Silver Wolf is really the story of a young woman finding out secrets about her family. Her mother had raised her, believing that she was one thing, and then she finds out along the way that she's a very different person in terms of her identity and her brother's identity. Because her parents pass away and her brother's disabled, she has to move to Eden, Kentucky, the town, the very town that her mother has told her not to go to, but she has no choice. She's broke, and she has a strange interaction with these interesting people at the parents' funeral, and this old man comes up and says to her, "You don't know me, but we're kin, and you need to come to Eden. We'll help you take care of Joey." And also at the funeral is this very intriguing man with silver hair who, when they shake hands, is bolt of electricity shoots between the two of them, and she knows there is something very special about this guy, but she's not sure what. So she winds up in Eden with this very bad boy and this mysterious history, and she finds out a lot about herself and her family along the way and becomes stronger. Initially, she's not a really strong person. She's been a student all her life, very cerebral, very scientific, and then she discovers there's things outside of the, you know, the normal realm, if you will, that she has to learn to accept about herself and her family. So that's book one.
Okay.
And then book two is Kiss of the Virgin Queen. And in that story, Homeland Security Special Agent Eliana Solomon is on a mission to prevent terrorist attacks. And she appeared in the first book as a secondary character who was doing an investigation of genies in the area because she had this very strong feeling that genies were in Eden, Kentucky. And genies, if controlled by a bad person, could be worse than having an atomic bomb at your disposal because they can do anything. And so her mission in Eden was to prove that genies existed, and she did. And she was able to prove to her boss and her boss's boss that this was something they should pursue. And so she works in the division of Homeland Security and the Science and Technology Directorate. And the Science and Technology Directorate is a real part of Homeland Security. What they don't know is I gave them a new division. I added the Anomaly Defense Division to their organizational chart, which is hanging over my desk.
I love it.
They don't know that Science and Technology Director is also in charge of taking care of paranormal events that might threaten the security of the United States.
Wow.
So, yes. So Eliana Solomon is here to prevent terrorist attacks, and it's hard enough to do when the threat's a human. It's almost impossible when it's an evil, shape-shifting genie. And she needs help, so she calls the sexy and beguiling psychiatrist, Arta Shahani, who is of Persian extraction. And she is reluctant to call him because no matter how good he is at his job, the last time they were working together, he left her for dead. There was an explosion, and he disappeared, and she almost died. And he's stunned. Just like a man. There's a crisis and he disappears.
Exactly.
Where did he go?
Exactly.
So he's equally surprised when he gets her phone call because he knows she's not real happy with him.
No, she's on her
And
list.
He feels very guilty about not having been there in her time of need, but there was a very compelling reason for him not being able to be there. He's afraid Also, that she's going to not be so accepting of his shapeshifting skills. He's a Persian lion shapeshifter. And
wow.
His family and his ancestors go back to the time of King Solomon, as do hers. And so there they have this crossing over many times over throughout history and throughout their ancestors' lives where they were together. And so there's this compelling destiny that they have, but they have to fight together to beat this evil genie, and they're going to have to work together, and they're going to have to combine their skills to do so.
Well, I have to say, your book trailer for this book is absolutely phenomenal. I love it, and I'd love to tell our listeners, if you haven't seen it, you have to go over to YouTube and watch the trailer for Kiss of the Virgin Queen, because it's outstanding.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful person
who
to work with is
trailer?
Ida Jansen of Amygdala Design did the trailer for me, and she does beautiful, beautiful work. And I thank
Absolutely.
You. I'm so glad that you enjoyed it.
Oh, it's wonderful. Now, I know that your history is kind of in nonfiction books, because I've seen that you've written some, like, health books and things. How did
yes.
you get into this genre?
Well, I've always been a storyteller, and when I was a little girl, I had a lot of paranormal experiences, and so
mm-hmm.
I would surprise people by blurting things out about them that they probably didn't want other people to know.
Oh.
And I got into trouble, and so I was pretty much shut down by my mother, who was not really happy with me saying these things. And it wasn't like I was lurking around listening to people's secrets. I would meet somebody new and say something about them, and they would just turn white. And so I didn't know that I was having psychic experiences. I just said stuff. I was a kid. And so my mother told me to stop making things up. And I got punished a lot for making things up. And so I started writing things down and started writing stories. And so I've been writing pretty much as long as I can remember, as long as I could hold a pencil or a pen, I've been writing. And when, you know, you get older and you realize that, you know, you need to eat, you need to have a roof over your head, that stuff had to go by the wayside, you know. Eating, drinking, having car payments.
Yes. Right.
Sort of puts, yeah. But, and I really wasn't, you know, I knew pretty much that I probably wasn't going to be able to do the starving artists in the attic, or, you know, because I didn't have a wealthy family that I could live off in their basement for the rest of my life. So I figured out I better get a job. And so over the course of my many varied career opportunities, I have been a registered nurse. I've been an IV therapist. I have been a researcher, healthcare researcher. I've been an association executive. I have been a professor and a chair and an educational administrator. I write textbooks because I noticed that there was nothing good at an introductory level for undergraduate students for healthcare management, which is my area of expertise. My PhD is in health resources management and public health. And so, you know, I was sitting at a meeting with a friend, and she and I were both complaining bitterly about the textbooks that were out there. And I hastened to tell people this was over a cup of coffee at breakfast. We were not drinking alcohol, because we must have done like 20 Goldilocks. What book are you using? I'm using this one. Do you like it? Nope,
right.
I hate it. What are you using? I'm using XYZ. Do you like it? Nope, I don't like it at all. Must have gone
mm-hmm.
back and forth 10 different titles. We were both so dissatisfied. The books, they were either, you know, like Goldilocks, too high up over everybody's head, or too low, and, you know, basically like healthcare management for dummies books. And so there was nothing that was specific for our field that we both really thought was appropriate. So we had this crazy idea. We looked at each other. I looked at her, and I said, you know what, you should write a book. And she said, no, you should write a book. And that went back and forth 10 times, and we finally agreed we should write a book. So Nancy Shanks and I became the great partners in 2004, and we are still great partners in crime and writing healthcare management textbooks. And the third edition is going to be coming out April 1st. So we're pretty much up to our eyeballs in galleys and edits right now. So that's
sure.
that's where that came from. Yeah.
Well, now, how did you end up in this genre with the paranormal?
Well, I kind of went back to my roots. I actually, you know, in addition to telling people stuff they didn't really want other people to know, and then in college I was fascinated with parapsychology. And so I actually, you know, in the 60s and 70s there was actually money for parapsychological research. And I don't know if you saw the recent Newsweek magazine, the CIA actually paid, you know, people to be remote viewers. So that was about the same time frame. So there was a lot of interest in parapsychology. The Rhine Institute at Duke University was big at that time. And there were a lot of experiments that were being done with undergraduate students. And I always like to say that many of the publications that you see in psychology journals really should be the journal of the psychology of undergraduate students, because it's all experiments that the volunteers participate in. And so I had, for instance, there would be images that I would be looking at and I'd be sending to someone else, or they'd be sending me images, and then you had to sort of pick what image it was that they were thinking about. And I had more than an average, you know, more than a random hit rate. I was over 70%, somewhere between 70 and 80% for my hit rate, which is, you know, 50% would be random. So it was very high. And so that sort of strengthened my feelings that this is, you know, something that's very real. And then also in college later on, I lived in a haunted home. So that was...
Wow!
So I lived in a haunted house, and I moved into the duplex with four other women, and I was so excited because I could afford the rent. It was $25 a month. This is going back a long time.
Yes.
I was unpacking my boxes in my garret room, and I heard my friend say, "Sharon," and I went running downstairs, and she was in the shower. And she was the only other person in the apartment at the time. And she comes out, and she lights up a cigarette. We all smoked at the time. And she says, I said, did you call me? Because I was upstairs, and I could have sworn I heard you. She goes, "Oh, I forgot to tell you, we have a ghost." And
oh,
I went,
my
"What?"
Gracious.
Just slipped your mind?
Oh, my gracious.
Yeah. So she was pretty verbal. And it was definitely a woman. She would use other people's voices. She would project other people's voices, and she would call your name.
Oh.
And she would walk the hallways. I stayed up one night doing an all-nighter, and I had a dachshund, a miniature dachshund at the time, and she was laying on me. It was an all-nighter, but I was taking a power nap, you know. And I lay down on the couch, and it was an organic chemistry exam I was freaking out about. And I heard footsteps come down the hallway, and I was the only person in the house. I heard footsteps coming down, and the dog started shaking and whining and quivering.
Oh.
And I knew it was her, and I said, "I'm really sorry. I know you're lonely, but I need to get a nap. I need to rest because I have a big exam tomorrow. Could you please just let me rest? Could you walk away, please?" And then the footsteps went away. So she was... She understood, you know, there was an interaction. She wasn't, you know, one of those sort of tape-recorded ghost experiences. She was interactive.
Right.
So that really, really added to it. And, of course, my brother, I found out when I was living there that my brother also had psychic experiences. He sees the ghost and I hear them. And so he had never revealed that before, but he was a former Green Beret, and he actually, they used him, by the way, as a remote viewer for the CIA. So I found this out many, many years ago.
What an interesting research that would be for how it runs in families to have that ability.
Exactly. And so I think that's part of why I'm so fascinated by families and one's identity kit. And how do you and your family fit together, and what are their secrets? Because every family has secrets, and some are worse than others. And, you know, there's a saying in the rooms that says your secrets will make you sick. And in some families, the secrets do make people very sick. And so, but in this instance, it was a revelation when my brother said, "Oh yeah, I was a remote viewer for the CIA." I almost fell out of my chair. I'm like, "Hello." Do you know what I've been working on for a long time?
Why haven't we had this discussion earlier?
Why haven't we had this conversation before, bro? You know, it was classified. It was classified. So, yeah.
Oh, my gracious.
So that's why I sort of always been, you know, around this. And the other nice thing about the paranormal genre is that, you know, I actually started writing in horror and mystery and science fiction. And by putting it under the umbrella of paranormal romance, you're able to do all of those things. You can cross all those barriers. You're not slotted into one category alone. And I really like that fluidity that comes with being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what fascinates me about this story is how you have intertwined the contemporary world with the biblical times. Kind of explain to our listeners how you came up with that idea, how you did your research to put together this fabulous storyline.
Well, thank you. I actually have to say that I was I fell in love with Catherine Neville's book, The Eight. And if you haven't read that book, the structure of the story is, and it's a very long story. It's a cult classic. It's been translated, I think, into 40 different languages. And it's the story takes place during the French Revolution and in contemporary times. And so the book, when she wrote it, was in the 70s, and OPEC was just coming into being, and actually Catherine Neville worked in the Middle East for a long time, so she had a very good understanding of that world. But she also did extensive research on the French Revolution, and she intertwined the background of the French Revolution with the contemporary story using Charlemagne's chess set. And the whole, you know, MacGuffin, if you will, is that if you get the chess set and all the pieces together, you can control the entire world. And so there are two teams. There's the black team and the white team, and one team wants all the sets, and the other set, the white team, doesn't want everybody to have the set together, and they work very hard to split it up. And so I was so taken. I think I've read The Eight at least eight times. I was so taken with the story, and I was so taken with the structure of the story that I wanted to do that in one of my novels. And Kiss of the Virgin Queen was really that was a leap of faith, if you will, when I did that, because I had the two storylines, but I knew I had to intertwine them so that they came out at the right time in the right place. And that was that was really a huge challenge.
Now, how did you go about researching for this book?
Well, Kiss of the Virgin Queen, I did a lot of research on biblical matters. I was fascinated by the fact that four great religions were fascinated by the story of King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. And in fact, there are three different countries that claim the Queen of Sheba as their own: Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and Ethiopia. And I chose the Ethiopian Makeda as my Queen of Sheba. Other authors could pick a different one from a different, you know, source. I know that Daughter of Wisdom, that author chose a different person, a different country to represent the Queen of Sheba. But my choice was Ethiopia, because Ethiopia has their entire country is founded on that story. And they're all of their kings and queens could trace their lineage to that relationship. So the Solomonic dynasty, the last emperor of Ethiopia, Haile Selassie, was the last person to claim his lineage through Solomon and Makeda, the Queen of Sheba. And so I found that they had, in my mind, the most interesting stories and the most compelling material that I wanted to bring to this story. And I just love the people. The Ethiopian people are very giving. They're beautiful people, and they're just very kind. And so anytime I mentioned to anybody who is Ethiopian that I was researching this book and doing it, they were like astonished and said, "Oh, you know, I was a cab driver. No, I won't charge you for a cab ride, because you're writing this book, and I can't charge you because you're writing about our queen. I mean, it was amazing.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, just a really wonderful, lovely people. And one of my students is Ethiopian, and I gave her and her father copies of the book, and she gave me a scarf that has a Queen of Sheba pattern on it that's absolutely stunning and was totally unnecessary and just very typical of the Ethiopian people. They're very giving, very generous people. So I'm excited to have, you know, learned so much about the Ethiopian culture.
Sure.
And the history, and to bring it to a wider readership, I hope, in terms of the Kabra Nagast, which is the Ethiopian holy book. The Quran also talks about Solomon and Sheba, so I was happy to have a Muslim Persian male lead. Arda Shahani is Persian extraction.
Right.
And he's an American, Persian American, but his family's all from Persia. His family has an interesting, you know, history. He doesn't even know he's a shapeshifter initially in the story. He's unaware, except for that history. You find that out along the way. And Eliana's family, it's all that, you know, her father is a Moroccan rabbi, her mother was Ethiopian, and her mother died of cancer when she was a little girl, and she became very angry at God. How could God do this to her? And I think that that's a fairly common feeling. How could God do this to me? I'm a good girl. My mother was a good woman. How could this be? And so I think that's a question for many readers, for many people. Why do bad things happen to good people?
Exactly.
And so she turned God off. She became very science-focused. She became an applied physics expert, and because God was not going to tell her what to do. So while I'm not preachy in the book, I think that there's some themes that resonate with people who have a religious background that they will say, yeah, I get that, you know. And for those who aren't familiar with the story of King Solomon and Queen of Sheba, I hope that it will invite them to read the original story in whatever religious tradition they come from.
Absolutely.
That's, you know, so it's fun. It's interesting. What I found most fascinating is that these four great religions have much more in common than they don't. And so that's another thing that I love to share with people, is saying, you know, we're more alike than you know, more alike than you think we are. And so we have a lot in common, and I like to focus on that as well.
Well, now, you have such a vast array of types of books that you've written. When you have your time to actually sit down and read a book, what type of book do you enjoy reading?
Well, I do a lot of nonfiction reading for my research for my books. I also do a lot of audiobooks when I'm walking my dog. I will listen to books that are related to research I'm doing. When I do just fun kickback read, something interesting that, you know, that it's in my genre or not, I like paranormal romance. I recently became very addicted to Corey Shrum's urban fantasy about necronites. Don't call them zombies. They're not zombies. They're necronites. And so she has a very interesting world that she's built. And I just recently, and people will say, oh my God, they'll gasp in shock when I say this, but I recently discovered Charlene Harris. Don't hate me. But I have not read, you know, the Sookie Stackhauser books. I got a deal on an audiobook for her Midnight series, and I was hooked. So, mostly when I'm reading other books, it's nonfiction. I have on my desk, I think, about 20 or 30 books about Native Americans right now, and on a shelf I've got another 20 or 30 books about Burma and World War II, because I'm working on two different books now. I'm working on a ghost story, The Haunting of Hotel LaBelle, and I'm also working on The Kiss of the Burmese Prince. So I have two stories that I'm trying to do some research on.
How long does it normally take you to research and write a book?
Well, Kiss of the Virgin Queen was a little unusual in that it was 4 years. Obsession took me 2 years because that book takes place in Mexico, and I've never been there. And
mm-hmm.
So I had to do a lot of research. Well, that's not quite true. I went to Tijuana like 100 years ago on a shopping tour with my in-laws on a bus. But I don't think that really counts. Cause, so,
right.
But the book takes place in Chihuahua, and it's about cults and cartels. And the heroine is a woman who has survived her crazy cult leader father, but only to discover when she goes to the daycare center that her crazy cult leader father has kidnapped her son, her one-year-old son, whom he believes is the chosen one. And she has to work with the U.S. government and Mexican government, and they tell her, sorry, it's a private kidnapping, nothing we can do about it. So she has to work with the very person that she doesn't want to work with, which is a drug lord, because that drug lord has longer arms than the law does and than anyone else would have in Mexico. So for that book, I researched that for 2 years, and I read so many books on cults and cartels, and I did so many movies, documentaries, watched so many documentaries that, you know, like on the Jonestown and all those other dreadful people that Dale, my husband, would come home. And before he would turn on the TV, he would say, is there something in here that's going to freak me out? what are we watching tonight that's going to gross me out? So,
right.
You know,
well, now, your books are available in ebook format and also print format, correct?
Yes, they are. Obsession was bought, the digital format was bought by Amazon Encore, which is their imprint for books that they think have been overlooked and that they want to re-promote under their umbrella, under their imprint. So I was pretty excited when they bought that from the Wild Rose Press. So we still have the print rights through the Wild Rose Press, but the e-books rights for Obsession are exclusively through Amazon for that book. On all my other books are available on Kobo, you know, Barnes & Nobles, you know, pretty much anywhere any e-books are sold, iTunes, Google Books.
Okay.
They'll be available there. So Kiss of the Silver Wolf, Kiss of the Virgin Queen, Some Other Child, which is my mystery. I've published five. I made the five-year milestone for Romance Writers of America this year with those. Yeah, I was very excited with that.
Sure. Well, now, tell our listeners, because we're almost out of time, I want them, and I could sit here and talk to you for at least another 30 minutes to an hour. I'm fascinated by
great.
Your psychic ability.
Thank you.
Where is your website that they can go find out more about you, your books, what's going to be upcoming?
Yes, it's www.SharonBookbinder, Sharon, SharonBookbinder.com. And I'm also on Facebook on Sharon Bookbinder, romance author. Just put my name in the search engine. I'm always, you know, happy to see people on Facebook or on my Twitter. I have Twitter at SBookbinder. I'm also on Pinterest. If somebody's interested and curious about what I'm working on, I have boards that I have for works in progress. And so, you know, I have a lot of pins for World War II, a lot of pins for Burma, a lot of pins for Native American materials now. So
that's fascinating.
And a lot of pug pictures because we have a pug.
You got to get those furry family members in.
That's right.
Yes.
My furry family members are in there as well, so definitely.
Well, you are just an absolute delight to visit with. As I mentioned, your whole, the psychic ability behind your books just makes them that much better to me. I just think that's fascinating. I want our readers to know that you just finished your Bewitching book tour, and they can definitely go back and see some of those sites. I'm sure that you probably have your stops listed on your website, so I hope they will all check that out.
I do. It's on my blog.
Okay.
If you go to my blog, you can see that. And I also have a newsletter sign up where I can send people, if somebody comes on my newsletter, I will send them information about upcoming books or information, and I often have giveaways, and to readers, I'll say the first 10 readers to respond to me will get a free ebook of their choice, that sort of thing. So I love connecting with my readers.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today. We wish you much success, and I hope everyone goes out and buys Kiss of the Virgin Queen. Like I said, I love the way you mix the contemporary and the biblical. I think that's fascinating and absolutely so unique. Well, thank you, and we
thank
hope
you.
To talk to you soon.
Lovely chatting with you, Gail. Thank you very much. You have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.